This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. In addition to the flag being raised over Montpelier High School, last week the Vermont House of Representatives passed a resolution, quote, recognizing the importance of the Black Lives Matter movement in the U.S. and Vermont Black communities. The resolution was adopted by a vote of 130-6, but one lawmaker, who is herself Black, says the discussion around the resolution included comments she calls racist, invalidating, and dismissive. Yesterday, I spoke with her, Representative Kaya Morris, a Democratic lawmaker from Bennington, and we began by talking about the substance of the resolution.
The resolution was really beautifully crafted in a way of being able to give a historical context for the Black Lives Matter movement in the United States, acknowledging the urgent social issues that were pressing, that really created the need for this movement and for a lens to be placed on the experiences of Black Americans in the United States. What the resolution was seeking to do was to not only give that historical frame of reference, but then talk about how it relates to our lived experiences as Vermonters. It did actually make a beautiful reference to the flag raising at the high school and even highlighted that the challenges and the kind of vitriol that was the backlash even that happened around that is just further proof that we have so much further to go as far as dealing with systemic racism and what it means for Vermonters. It was powerful to be able to have so many members vote on the record in support of this bill. So it was a real contrast to have the commentary and the candor that took place on the floor in the 2 days revolving around that bill's resolution's passage.
And this isn't the first year that there's been a resolution that involves validating the Black Lives Matter movement. I think this is the third year, right?
Correct. It is. It is. Absolutely.
But this is the third year that there was this discussion both before the vote and then, as you said, it was 2 days. There was another conversation again the next day. So why did that happen in the first place?
So typically when we do resolutions, they're more ceremonial in nature. And so part of what happens within this is the concept is brought forth to the body and members that want to are given an opportunity to sign on as sponsors. They're saying their stated support for that resolution. In this circumstance for this year, we had trouble with drafting schedules and many members didn't actually get an opportunity to sign on. And a number were actually distressed about the fact that they really wanted to be able to be a part of this and ensure that their voice and their name are associated with the good work and in solidarity with communities of color. So we made a decision in talking with leadership amongst the House around whether or not there was a way for people to still state on the record openly and clearly their commitment to this work. And that's through an actual roll call vote. So instead of it being just sort of a voice vote where we just sort of applaud and say, yes, we passed this bill, it's a chance for people to go hard on the record with their name next to the action that they're taking and saying, we're here, and we're committed to this work. So that does give an opportunity for floor debate, for conversation. And that conversation does take place each year. Even with it being ceremonial, there are always those who can speak up and say, I oppose this or I support this in different ways. But it took on a very different tone. It was very intentional and deliberate. And some of the comments that were made, they were written in advance and it was stunning. It was stunning, some of the kind of spirit of what was being said, a sort of confrontational nature and very invalidating to the experiences, dismissive of hard data that has been validated in multiple venues, is acknowledged openly through our state government, and yet we're saying that's not really what happens and you're being hyperbolic and, you know, and furthermore, this is divisive. This passage of this resolution is the component that is dividing our country and dividing our communities, dividing our house, and instead of the actual oppression and systemic racism itself as being the deciding factor for what's creating this chasm.
Could you share some of the comments that you found particularly troubling and hurtful?
C- quite honestly, I am not comfortable doing that. I think what's the challenge is I don't want to put someone else's words through my mouth.
You know what? That's fine. We went through some of the audio of the session that you're talking about. I can read a couple of comments that we've transcribed.
I think I'd prefer to respond in that way. Yes. I could respond to the excerpts that you
Yeah. So here are a couple of comments that Representative Robert Frenier of Chelsea made. He said, in part, without discounting the honest perceptions of many members of this House, I'm troubled by the language of the resolution and cannot support it. It goes too far. For example, one of the phrases in the resolution says, quote, whereas Black Lives Matter was formed to affirm Black Americans' humanity and resilience in the face of deadly oppression, end quote. I'm happy to affirm the humanity of every American, in fact, every human being, but I cannot concur with the assertion in this resolution that African Americans face, quote, deadly oppression. So those are the words as we've transcribed them from Robert Frenier. Is that the kind of thing that was said that really just put you back on your heels, Representative Morris?
Absolutely. It's a complete dismissal of history, both past, present, and current, that is completely ignorant of the real lived experiences of Black Americans, of people of color in the state. To say that there is not a deadly oppression, the components of systemic racism and the way that it works is this is a centuries-old system of marginalizing different members of our society. These happen through codification of laws from segregation to employment discrimination. We have health disparities, educational experiences, and they all build on an entire experience that literally leads to death. In some cases, we've seen through police violence, we've seen through, again, healthcare outcomes, we've seen through rampant poverty. These things do create death. They create a cessation of life in a way that says these lives don't matter. And to just summarily reject that and to not be open to understanding it. We were openly challenged on it. I believe one of the things that Representative Frenier did even state as he was staring me in the face, trying to challenge that we were to come back with new data to prove our case that these things are happening.
I think we have him saying here, and again, this is our transcription from his remarks that we could hear on the audio. I urge the body to defeat this resolution, and I request the resolution's authors to come back to us with a resolution more likely to bring us together and less likely to imply that Vermont is populated by bigots.
One of the things that we do when we struggle with race talk, and I believe Dr. Daryl Wingsu has a phenomenal book called Race Talk and the Conspiracy of Silence. And it really looks at the ways that we as a society shut down challenges to what our understanding of race relations in the United States are. We want to see ourselves as being enlightened. We want to see ourselves as being fully prepared to be engaged citizens. We want to see ourselves as better than where we are. This resolution was not seeking in any way to say we're not those things, that we're not doing good work, that people aren't trying, but it is not enough. And it is not a personal attack on any individual to say that there's more work to do. By clinging to a particular rhetoric that says we feel that, you know, this resolution is painting our state as being full of bigots, we know that that wasn't the case. We had 130 members who had no problem signing on to this bill. Hmm. Yet, the conversation becomes dominated by those who don't even want to affirm the viewpoints of those who did vote in support of it, as well as those by whom this resolution speaks to their true lived experiences.
The next day you tweeted, not only did you find the comments by some members of the House dismissive and racist, you also used the word invalidating. And I may be reading into your tweet, but it sounds like that felt to you very personally invalidating. And I'm wondering, beyond what you talk about, the facts and the circumstances, this sounds like it felt personally hurtful and wrong to you.
Well, one of the things I think that's easy for us to do when we want to cling to a notion of colorblindness is an inability to see that a person's experience can be vastly different. One can be vastly different from another. It is an unwillingness to say and see me as a Black woman and understanding that my experiences as a Black woman, as a peer that you work with every day in this building, that we sit across from the cafeteria from each other all the time, we pass each other in the hallway and give each other greetings, that there are very real pains and struggles that I know, that I have experienced, that my family has experienced, that my people have experienced, that Vermonters are experiencing, that is different. And so in my floor comments, I really did try to implore folks to see me. I'm not just up here in this position of power, completely numb and unaware of what's happening, nor am I immune to the effects of this. So the results of this are that we have guests that came to hear this reading who left in tears. We have youth who walked away very disaffected and confused and distressed by the candor and the behavior of the adults in the room, these leaders that we've placed in front of them. And that is invalidating. And it is a personal challenge for me because I don't believe that my work has been about trying to point fingers. It has been about trying to build bridges. But part of that coming across the bridge and reaching across the aisle and touching my hand and seeing me, seeing who I am, looking me in the eye, is not only acknowledging my humanity, my experience, but saying, you know what, I can't relate, but I appreciate the fact that you're here and your courage for being willing to say something.
Does it also say, and I believe you?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
There's been a lot of talk, even in the Vermont legislature, about the Me Too movement and about the experiences that women have had in state government. And there may also have been invalidating comments that I don't know about that have been made in relation to that. But it seems striking to me that there seems to be a universal acceptance of a belief when women say they have been mistreated or harassed, and not the same universal belief in the systemic racism in our country that is also in Vermont. Am I correct in seeing a difference there?
I think they are interestingly intersectional. You know, I think that's kind of both that same invalidation that doesn't want to look at how sexism and patriarchy are oppressing women is the same. It comes from the same vantage of dismissing the experiences of people of color in the state. It's absolutely one and the same. Mm. Those same notions of, well, chin up and just don't let it get to you. Dismiss the continued micro-invalidations and microaggressions that people of color, that women experience every single day. Every single day. And so if you're not familiar with microaggressions, to be able to explain that, these are the small things that happen on a daily basis. These are the slights. These are the, and many, many, many times, missteps that are fairly innocent. Because as a country, we are unrehearsed at dealing with race issues. We are unpracticed at knowing how to have courageous conversations. We are just beginning to touch the surface of how to truly be anti-racist and to create a society that is not functioning under a system of bias. We are terrible at it. We flub at it. We double down. We get defensive. We shut down. That's part of this experience because the work is so difficult. And so the microaggressions that happen every day or the little small slights, the small things, the comments, the gestures, those pieces, those comments, much like what was said on the floor, that take away from whom we are, the ones that sometimes even conflate the issues. There was a comment made that was, it was truly disturbing, that tried to make a link between abortion rates and the conversations we were having about discrimination against blacks in the United States and about a historical context of violence against blacks. That was made on the floor, and it was just distressing.
This is Representative Vicky Strong of Albany, and she's on the record on the resolution as saying, "Madam Speaker, I voted yes on this resolution, and I would like to acknowledge the disproportionate number of black unborn children that have been aborted in our country that would have been included in the number of black lives that matter." That's the comment you're referring to?
Yes. Yeah. That's how we distract ourselves from the conversation, and that's a way that, while there may have been some sort of who knows what motivation brought that representative to want to make those particular comments at that particular moment, even in the face of literal members of our community, of our residents of Vermont, citizens of Vermont, weeping openly, still we're not able to find enough humanity to stop with the barrage, to not ignore the fact that what was being said was harmful and hurtful. These are the things that build up every day. And if we can have this happen here in our house, you know without a doubt it is happening everywhere in Vermont. It is happening within our workplaces. It is absolutely happening in our schools and in our communities. And so you either swallow it and you deal with it, or you confront it and you change it. And that's really what we're trying to do. And that's what's been happening every year that we brought this resolution forward. And that's why the first year we had a good, strong number, but this year we had 130 that said, yes, I will vote in support of this, because we have to keep pressing the conversations. Because here's the bottom line. So even though the comments continued on the next day, many members got up and left as one member tried to bring some peace to it and say, you know, this is hard work and we all have a job. If we were really going to call ourselves white allies, we have to think about what this work means. And we can't just dismiss the things that sound difficult for us to understand or that we don't want to hear. That's our job. That is our job as leaders and as stewards of this state. That's our responsibility. That is our charge. And at that response, multiple members got up and left. And I say this, again, not to try and lambast those who, again, as we as a nation, fail consistently on trying to deal with these issues. I bring this up to say that people of color are not offered or ever afforded the opportunity to walk away from this experience. We are never afforded the opportunity to opt out because it's hard. We don't get to suddenly not be black, not be Latino, not be Asian American. We don't have these options to suddenly remove our religious beliefs. These things don't happen because it's inconvenient or because it's uncomfortable. We have to sit with that discomfort. We have it affect our lives, affect our health, and our very ability to move happily through these halls.
So, given all that, then, Representative Morris, where does the House, and where do we go from here? Knowing in some ways things that that many people already knew, but also, you know, having this out here, where then does this conversation go, or does the action go?
I think the conversation goes forward. I think it moves forward. Again, we had many members that were able to vote in support of it, even if some of their actions the next day didn't reflect that. We had many members who are getting it. Our administration is working on this. We have bills happening here in the House and the Senate that are trying to address this. Our communities are having grassroots efforts, coalitions that are being built that are trying to address this in every facet of our lives. So we have to keep moving forward. And at some point, we will do better, and we are continuing to do better, but we can't walk away from it, and we can't pretend like it's something that somebody else has to do. It has to be done today, and that is the only way that we're going to be able to see the changes that we need, truly.
You mentioned that some members of the public who had been there to see this resolution pass left in tears, left very upset, left confused. Has anybody followed up with them? You know, have you talked with them? Have other people reached out to them?
They have. I think it's important to know as well that there were many members within the body that were incredibly distressed by this. I was one of them. It would be a disservice for me to say that I sat through those 2 days and was not distraught by the entire experience, that I was not dismayed by the entire experience, that I was not shaken by the entire experience. And I've obviously had many worse experiences in my life. That's part of the American experience as a non-white individual, right? But many of us were taken aback and are still trying to find ways to move forward. Because we are all Vermonters, too.
Well, I really appreciate you talking with us about it and sharing your story and your experience and where you think the conversation can go from here. I appreciate it.
I appreciate this. Thank you for the opportunity.